The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to WVUD's Campus Voices, weekly conversations with interesting members of the university community, visitors to campus, and others engaged in thought-provoking research and community service. Stay tuned for Campus Voices on WVUD.
Thank you, Vince. And this morning on Campus Voices, we're joined by Sean Cosgrove, one of my colleagues from UD Information Technologies. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And we're also in here with Allie Delaney, one of our students. Good morning, Allie.
Good morning, Richard.
And Sean's down here. We try to do this every so often in October because October every year is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And Sean is the guy behind a lot of what we're doing at the University of Delaware to teach people about phishing and other kinds of things they can do to get themselves in trouble. Tell us about the phishing tests, and then we'll backtrack to what all is going on.
Oh, the phishing tests. Everybody loves the phishing tests. Let me give you a little bit of background about myself. I'm an IT security analyst. I work for the IT security policy and compliance team in central IT at the Computing Center. I've been here about 1 year. Prior to my time here, I was with a large bank in the area for a couple of decades working in operations and global information security. As you mentioned, right now my team does run the SecureUD Cybersecurity Awareness Program for the university. That includes our anti-phishing efforts, the Securing the Human training modules that we share with the university community, along with some other internal policy and compliance programs within Central IT.
But the big thing we wanted to talk to you about today is phishing, because that seems so simple. Allie, did you want to ask him something about this just right out the get-go?
Yeah, what is phishing?
So phishing is emails used to attempt to gain access to information that's not authorized. I'm sure everyone is familiar with what spam is. Phishing is a little bit more malicious than spam. Normally, an email will come in with a malicious link or an attachment that can actually give a hacker unauthorized access to your computer. So what we do, a great analogy for what we do is sort of like a fire drill, but in email form, because we would like to educate the community about what these malicious emails look like and what to do if you actually get one. So the way we do that is send out test emails to mimic malicious emails that hackers are sending in order to train people what to do when you get them. We're actually running a really great contest this month for National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And if users receive one of our test emails and report that email to the email address reportafish@udel.edu, they'll be entered into a contest to win one of our great prizes, including gift cards. Also, if users complete one of our training modules this month, they'll also be entered into the contest as well.
I think one of the things people need to realize is that it seems annoying to get these tests, but phishing is a real danger. I mean, spam and phishing are both unsolicited email. Spam's, if you will, unsolicited commercial email. But phishing is dangerous stuff. I mean, it's not just on campus. I mean, but there are news stories about some of the big hacks. Oh, my God, the Russians hacked this, the Russians hacked that. And typically, not typically, but a lot of the time, the breach has happened.
It is. It is the number one threat factor. It's the number one security risk at this time, I think. 65% of all breaches are initiated with a phish.
Just by someone being stupid about email.
Well, people don't take that extra second to think before they click, to think before you click on that link, or think before you download that attachment. Things are not always what they seem. It's always worth it to take that extra few seconds to look at that link, look at that attachment, and make sure that that sender is really who they say they are. Because I see them. I see hundreds and hundreds of these suspicious emails every day coming into the university. It's happening as we speak right now.
I think one of the things that people don't realize is that this is one of the easiest ways an individual like you, Allie, can keep your computer safe and keep our network safe, is paying attention to the email you get.
Sure. I definitely encourage people to set up email rules to filter, you know, filter incoming messages. We have a very proactive, talented staff within IT. I work closely with the email system administrators to take proactive action against suspicious emails that come in. I have a great team of security engineers who are also very proactive and definitely supportive of our efforts across the university. So we have a great team and a great staff. We definitely care about the user. We don't want people to feel tricked. My team is here to help you. We're here to help you learn what to do in case you actually get a malicious email or a phish.
So what happens when you click a link on this? What type of information could people have on their computers that hackers could get a hold of?
A couple different things could happen. Malicious programs could get downloaded to your computer. The link could take you to a website that may appear to be a legitimate website. It may look just like your UD login page, look just like your standard Amazon login page. But once you put your credentials in, that username and password will be owned by that hacker and could be used to access your personal information, impersonate you. One of the things we have seen evolving lately are malicious attachments. So that would be a file attached to an email. The email instructs you to download, and that file will run an executable file on your computer to gain access to your information.
And it's not just your information. They often want your account.
Definitely your account. Credentials are what we're talking about here. That's username and password. I don't know about you, but I would recommend not keeping financial information stored on my computer, stuff like credit card numbers, account numbers, password, social security numbers. Those are things I like to keep offline for that simple fact that if you are compromised, that information becomes available to the hacker.
Why do we at the University of Delaware care, Sean, when Yahoo announces millions of accounts have been compromised?
Well, no one likes to deal with a compromised account. We should care because that account could be yours. That account could be mine. I'm very vigilant about watching the news, looking for security trends, including announcements like Yahoo, the Yahoo breach that you just mentioned. Everybody has seen the Equifax breach, this big news topic lately. That's also a great example of an attack that the threat vector used was phishing. Everybody has seen, you know, numerous government officials who've had experienced breaches in the last month or two. Those are also initiated by phishing vectors. So we're taking the phishing threat very seriously here at the university. That's another reason why we're running these tests monthly to remediate some of that risk for the university community.
Well, I had in mind, too. I mean, there's a specific bad behavior that people tend to do with their passwords, which would mean that if your Yahoo account is compromised, what could happen?
Well, if you're using the same password for more than one account, that's a pretty high risk. We don't want to, you know, don't want to encourage that type of behavior. I know it's a little bit of a pain to manage, you know, a glossary or a dictionary full of passwords, but that's the reason why. Because if one account is compromised with the same password that you're using for the other 10 accounts, then the risk is self-explanatory.
Yeah, if you're using the same password at Yahoo that you use at WSFUS and you use at the University of Delaware,
Yeah, it's a problem. That's why we recommend people change passwords between accounts and keep that information offline.
About the Equifax and Yahoo breaches, what are companies doing to prevent these hacks? And also, like, what's their duty to society to do that?
Well, unfortunately, we hear a lot of the worst case scenarios. There are definitely some security blunders that we've seen. Personally, I recall one a week or two ago where the server was using the default credentials to log in. And I mean by default.
You mean like what came from the factory?
Right. So comes from the factory, set up as admin as the login and admin as the password. No one even needs to exploit a vulnerability or send a phish in because they just try the default credentials and they're in.
It's amazing. Some of these things you hear, it's ridiculous how easy it is for the bad guys to get in. Allie won't remember, but you probably will. Kevin Mitnick, he's now a security consultant, but he started off life as a bad boy. And one of his mates went by the name of Susie Thunder, and the Department of Defense called her in as a consultant one time. And she said, "You give me the name of a military base, and I'll have the commander's password within half an hour." And she just got on the phone, pretended to be different kinds of people, and bingo, within 20 minutes, she had the base commander's password. I mean, it's people just do stupid things. I mean, they need to think.
Think before you click. That's what we tell people. Yeah, Kevin Mitnick is definitely one of the most famous / infamous hackers in cybersecurity history. Actually, we've been working or considering working with the security consulting company that he is associated with at this time. And actually, he's famous for his business card. It's actually a really neat business card. It's aluminum and flat, but it's shaped in a way that you can pull off lock picks. And if you think of the illusion there, right. So if you think of the illusion there, he's alluding to hackers being able to break into places. And that's, you know, the toolkit, quote unquote, which is what those lockpicks symbolize.
We're talking with Sean Cosgrove, one of my colleagues in University of Delaware Information Technologies. And we're talking about phishing and all sorts of kinds of things that people need to be wary of. And you remember in November 2016 or not November, it was October of 2016, about a year ago, the news was filled with reports the Russians hacked Clinton's campaign manager's account. What did John Podesta do?
John Podesta did not address a fish that he received appropriately. He must have...
Say it like you mean it. He clicked where he shouldn't have clicked.
He did not think before he clicked. That's right. He must have clicked a link or downloaded something that he was not supposed to. So yeah, the phishing threat is not just in the university. It's nationwide and it's global, and it's something that everybody should take very seriously. As I mentioned, I see these fish coming in daily, tens if not hundreds of them coming in daily. So please think before you click. If you do receive one of these suspicious emails, we have a program set up to address them. You can forward that suspicious email directly to an email address that comes right to my desk. My team will take a look at it. We'll be able to send it to the security engineering team so that they can take a look at it. That email address is reportafish, that's PHISH, at udel.edu. And you'll get a nice reply back telling you whether or not that email is legitimate or if it's malicious. So please take advantage of that program. As we mentioned, we are running a contest this month for those of you who do use that service.
I think we need to recognize that falling for a fish can have dollars and cents consequences. Two cases that have come out in the past 18 months. One was a millionaire who was buying some real estate in Manhattan, and his realtor's account got hacked by a fish. And the other actually happened to a UD alum about 2 years ago, where his realtor got hacked by falling for a fish. And in both cases, they wired their money for closing. In one case, millions of dollars. The other case, tens of thousands of dollars to the wrong bank.
Absolutely. Those credentials that we were talking about earlier definitely have a monetary value assigned to them. Hackers can take usernames and passwords, credit card numbers, social security numbers, and sell that information. If they get that information from you, there's definitely a monetary value associated with that, let alone the reputational and financial impact to the university, to you personally. There's an impact to people whose credit report information was stolen in the Equifax breach. I mean, that's a lifelong impact. Your social security number does not change for your entire life. So if it's lost at one point, that could have long-term consequences on your finances going forward.
Allie wanted to ask you something about all these easy apps people make, you know, to make it easy on your phone to do online banking or to buy this and buy that.
How wary should people be of putting their information that are like Venmo, how you can just send money to each other? They have all your banking account information, PayPal, that kind of stuff. What is the risk with that?
Well, people should be wary. I don't think it's to the extent where people should be paranoid or not try to take advantage of a new app that's out there, but definitely take the time to do a little bit of critical thinking, do a little bit of research. Does this app make sense? Is it asking for something suspicious? You know, anything that asks for your full social security number right off the top of my head would raise a red flag for me. But don't let that prohibit you from using any new products out there, but maybe give it a day or two to be reviewed by somebody else before you jump right in feet first.
Well, the other thing is you have to be careful about what you download from, say, the Google Play Store, because they don't has, say, the same rigorous testing that the Apple Store does. But I mean, there are some great things out there, but then there also are knockoffs that are designed to lure you into clicking.
Oh, sure. I just read a news report a couple of days ago. There were several apps taken out of the store because they were found to contain malware. So even if an app is at a development stage where it's moved into production, you know, granted a license to be sold on the
Google Play Store?
Yeah, I was thinking Apple. Was it iTunes or the Apple Store?
Yeah.
You know, even if an app is for sale, it doesn't mean that it's safe. Definitely take the time to do your own research on that app.
I think one of the things people need to be aware of, Sean, is that this is not just something that IT professionals like you and me need to worry about. I mean, this, having your account hacked, having your information stolen, is something that regular students like Allie or regular faculty members or anybody listening to us needs to worry about.
I think I'm a parent, so I think about all of the devices that my children use. You know, my children have tablets. You know, are my children's tablets secure? I have friends who have Fitbits. Are those Fitbits secure? So this is definitely a threat that affects not only, as you mentioned, the community, but students, faculty, staff. And it's big business. We work with a lot of vendors. There are a lot of phishing education vendors that have approached us to, you know, sell their product to help educate the community. It's big business. The threat exists, as you mentioned, across all scope of users.
Well, you're too nice. You talk about it's big business, and then you start talking about people who are trying to help train. It's big business on the other side, too. I mean, it's an accepted way for computer science students to go work in some parts of Eastern Europe and Asia.
Sure. It's job security, literally and literally and figuratively.
I'm talking about creating the fish. I'm talking about, you know, the hacking is like an industry.
Sure. There is a job, you know, job market for black hat hackers. Black hat hackers are the malicious actors that think of the people that are trying to break in. That's a black hat hacker. There are people that, like me, that try to keep those actors out. You know, I'm a white hat hacker. There are gray hat hackers who do both, more of a research and development, penetration testing, things like that. But business is good on both sides of the ball.
Phishing, it's just so simple. And we just keep seeing people fall for it here on campus. What are we seeing in the phishing tests?
Oh, if I told you what you were going to see, it would take away the effectiveness, right?
Well, no, but I mean, what are we seeing in terms of the results?
Well, I definitely get a report. So normally our tests run about a week, and we will send an email out to every single staff member, faculty member. Sometimes we pick a smaller population if we want to target our phishes. But I will get a report, and I will see who clicked, who didn't click, and we can run statistics week to week, month to month. The goal, obviously, would be to see the number of people clicking going down, and I'm happy to say that we have seen that historically over the last 6 months, so we do feel like our program is being effective.
But we're still seeing way too many. Isn't it around 10% or so sometimes?
It is. We started a little bit higher. And it's gone down, but right now we do have a click rate of about 10.5%. Like to see that number go down. I'm happy to see the number of people that are engaged, because people are taking it seriously. The number of reported emails that have come in to report a fish has gone way up the last month or so. I attribute that maybe to our contest. I'm definitely seeing the community become more engaged. People are reading the same news reports that I see. So I know that, you know, people, you know, are learning more about the phishing threat, basically.
This phishing threat that Sean Cosgrove is talking about with us is a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just at the University of Delaware. It's not just in the United States. And it's one of the many different kinds of scams that people fall for. I was visiting an older couple from the church that Allie and I met at, and they fell for one of the Microsoft phone scams, where somebody calls and pretends to be from Microsoft and says, I'm Sunil from an authorized reseller of Microsoft products, and we've noticed that your account is in danger. Your computer is needing fixing.
So the technical term for that is VISH. That's V-I-S-H.
Voice.
Right. So that's the voice fish. same concept, right? Somebody calls you or somebody emails you, is trying to get access to your information so that they can steal it, sell it, use it for their own malicious purposes. Exactly. These things come in on phone now, not just email. We have a great VoIP technician, and I have seen a couple of those come in, and we have been able to take some action and follow up with a telecom provider about that fish. Not so much as an email fish, and I think that it's just so much easier to get that same message out to a higher number of targets via email.
What can university offices do to make sure that people know that their message is a genuine one and not a fish?
Great question. There is a set of communication guidelines, very detailed, very outlined on the I think there's a link from the IT page that we highly encourage university communications people to use. And the reason we encourage people to do that is so that that user can distinguish between a legitimate email and a malicious email. For example, when my team sends out a communication, we will always, always, always include a statement at the end that says, to validate the integrity of this message, call this number or email this box, and we will be able to verify for you that that message is legitimate. So we highly encourage other departments at the university to do the same thing. There was an email campaign that I've seen recently where those guidelines were not followed. And I have to tell you, Richard, it was by far the most reported suspicious email that I've seen since the program started. And it was a legitimate email.
It came from a third-party vendor,
right,
that didn't include any verification information.
Right.
So the good news is people thought it was suspicious because it didn't have any verification.
Right. The good news is lots and lots of people reported it. The bad news is it was a totally legitimate email from the university.
And that's something that we're trying to get people to prevent. The College of Arts and Sciences just sent out their newsletter. And indeed, if you look at their website, they have a link that talks about their communication partner and what links will look like in their newsletter. That's one of the ways that we'd want people to do this.
Absolutely. You can also include a link to the department's website in the email. We like to see standard templates or standardized communications so that users get used to receiving that branded message from the department. Keep in mind that the skilled hacker will do the same thing. They will take a legitimate email, model a malicious fish to look just like a legitimate email. You know, the way you combat that is to think before you click, take that extra couple of seconds and do some critical thinking. Does this look legit?
So to recap for people out there who didn't really know about phishing before, didn't know about the dangers, what are the things we can do to prevent this happening to us?
If for any reason you're not 100% sure that email is legitimate, forward it to report a fish. reportafish@udel.edu, and he'll come right to my team, and we will help you determine whether it's malicious or, you know, validate it with a third party if we need to. We have a well-trained staff, and we're happy to help people determine that, you know, make that determination for themselves. If you don't want to forward it, or for some other reason want to do your own research, you can hover your mouse clicker over the link and take a look at whatever URL that link leads to. Does this look like ups.com? Does this look like a udel.edu address? Very often an email will purportedly come from someplace legitimate but have a link that goes to a nonsense website. That's a great way to tell. You can also actually call the real company that email is supposedly coming from. Hey, did you send me this email? Is this real? It looks a little suspicious. Can you verify for me that this is a legitimate email? Those two things are probably the best ways to determine if it's malicious or not.
Sean Cosgrove, we've got time for probably one more answer, and there's one thing we haven't explained to people, and that is, what are the tricks they should look out for in a fish? I mean, how is it that these miscreants are tricking so many intelligent people into clicking where they shouldn't click?
Very often the email address will come from a similar but not exact email. There will often be misspellings in the email, grammatical mistakes.
That false sense of urgency is a big part of it too.
Absolutely. One of the most common threats is to see emails that threaten your account. Your account will be closed down. We need you to respond immediately. We see like missed packages are a big thing. It preys on the recipients, you know, like you said, the sense of urgency and trying to get people to respond immediately.
One of my favorite tactics was sending email from a phone company to you thanking you for your payment for $1,417, which immediately goes, what? I don't remember doing that. And so you click a link without thinking.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of invoice requests. If an email comes in from someone that you don't know or not familiar with and it's requesting information, that's another big red flag. You shouldn't be giving out your personal information or peer information to somebody that you don't know.
Sean Cosgrove, thank you so much for coming in and joining us on Campus Voices.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official views of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archived episodes, visit our website, www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.